great.
But here's what he did.
Rhyme it. Do you know how to rhyme it? Oh, please just rhyme it.
And he really gets into it.
Do you know how to rhyme it?
Yes, of course.
We will you don't even have to think about it. Like, so let's rhyme it today. Rhyme it.
Yes.
We are going to rhyme it. Just
Ram that's where he just rammed
it. Everybody,
I don't remember any of it.
That's good. That's the way to go.
All over the Rams today and ram it.
I mean, now he's like on his feet.
How are you
guys? Whose house?
Wow.
Ram it.
All right, we're back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rams Brothers, the pod. I'm your host, Dean, and I'm joined by the other host of this show, Nick. And Nick, it's been a little while. How are you?
I'm great. That intro gets cooler every time I see it.
It seemingly does. You got to remember the greatest season that ever was. You got to flash back to it whenever you can.
Puts me right back in the Rams Brothers mindset.
Yeah, it does. You got to get something to get you started. That's the MO of this podcast. Clearly, you and I talked about how if I'm not scripted for the first minute, I don't know what the hell I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So it's good. We got to get our bearings back. You know, we've been off for a little bit. So
Dean missed out on the USC improv class that I took.
Here in Philadelphia, at my alma mater, we didn't have any improv classes to offer. So I just had to learn from Nick. Mm. So that's how I came prepared for the podcast.
Bipartisan.
Before we jump into anything crazy, I hope everybody had an awesome Father's Day and Juneteenth. But before we jump into the pod, I just want to say our partners at BetOnline, they continue to be the number one source for all of your betting and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developing, including this year's Stanley Cup, the World Series, the latest fighting news, and even next season's early NFL and NBA futures. Matthew Stafford for MVP, it's on BetOnline. Rams to repeat, it's on there too. What you have to do is you have to head to the website, use your mobile device to sign up today, receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to get the bonus and get into the action. Bet online where the game starts. All right, Nick, we were talking about the theme song, the intro, flashing back to this time last year. I took a minute just to recognize how far we've come in this script, in the latest episode. I looked back at the script. I listened to the podcast, just trying to understand where our mindset was. And it sounded like we were just extremely nervous. And rightfully so, right? I think the Rams had a lot to sell to us fans prior to the season starting. All of it came in with a roaring success. But before it all started, there was a lot of things that were unsettling. So, you know, a little flashback, Nick. I know we were both kind of unsettled in the beginning of the season. In the off season, why don't you take us back to how you felt back then?
I think the best way we can figure out exactly how I felt would be if you were to play the little snippet of the podcast that we have from a year ago today.
I think I have that.
Talked about the video that the Rams released to announce their schedule.
Should I go ahead and play it?
Yeah, I think it's going to make me look great, but you might as well just throw it on.
And blast to the past.
Excited, but I'm, you know, it's more coming from it's the same with the offense. I'm not blown away by this Rebel Wilson Malibu house, you know, Showtime Rams yet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just not there.
I think all of that was fair criticism. I just, it was a tough, big sell. And then, you know, after like 3 weeks, I was, you know, you can run the take. I was completely invested.
But, run the tape. You were. No, you completely were. But you, when all of this stuff comes out about your team and they kind of rebrand themselves, right? They had a big sell with SoFi Stadium on its own. They had a big sell with just bringing in new faces. I think they had 9 new coaches coming in from March of last year, right? They had Matthew Stafford coming in, a massive blockbuster trade between Goff and Stafford. There were so many other pieces. We were talking about DeSean Jackson and Tutu Atwell and Jacob Harris and their impact on the incoming season. Neither of them really had any impact whatsoever besides DeSean Jackson in the first 7-8 weeks of the season before he decided he wanted to go play for the Las Vegas Raiders. So in understanding all of that, right?
Falls over there.
And Nick, you like you said, with the whole branding thing, like Rebel Wilson was the face of that branding campaign. Like you wanted to have somebody that was recognizable, that could release the schedule, that was technically a Rams fan. Like it's just when you don't win and you're trying to the journey leading up to winning and to becoming a brand new brand, I think is a little bit stressful and made us a little bit uneasy.
I think as a fan of the Rams, if you think about it, like this whole brand with this logo, this new LA logo right here, was kind of marketed as like a catch-all, you know? It was like, sure. we're not appealing to football fans. We want to just reach, you know, just like the bigger LA network of the world, just Los Angeles in general, you know, like Sunshines and Waves and whatnot. And when you hear that, you're like, what does this have to do with Rams? And what does this have to do with actually winning games? And it fogs your mind and it makes you like a little – it made a lot of us very disappointed in the direction of the team. It was like too flashy and whatnot. And you're like, oh, do they even care about the product on the field? And now when looking back, it almost is like, and I don't want to give the organization too much credit. Who's the guy? Demoff. I love Demoff, but you know, he's not, I was about to say genius. I don't think he's a genius, but a lot of really smart marketing moves, because now it fits right in with this Dodgers hat that I'm wearing. It looks really good next to a Lakers logo. And I think it was almost like a race with the Chargers to be that LA team.
Yep.
And now they have definitely, become like the great brand that they foresaw.
You know what? And a lot of it does have to do with Kevin Demoff. A lot of it has to do with the willingness of him just going out on a limb and kind of creating things on his own. Like you said, Nick, there weren't a lot of things that he did throughout this process that were misses. And a lot of the things that started from the top, right? A lot of those big time decisions with where are we going to take this franchise on the field and off the field, right? I think those were all big decisions that needed to be made. And for somebody to be around the organization as long as Kevin Demoff was, shared the same vision with Stan Kroenke, whether that's controversial or not to St. Louis fans or whatnot, they took it an opportunity and expounded upon it. And I think that from whatever position you are in business, whether you're a fan, whether you're in the front office, whether you're a player, you have to be appreciative of the process. And I think that starts with the people that are at the very, very top. And that's Kevin Demoff, it's Tony Pastors, it's Stan Kroenke, and everybody else that is an executive chair of the Los Angeles Rams, Jim Everett, Kurt Warner, whoever else is responsible for the decision-making behind the branding. You know, it wasn't maybe necessarily something that was sold immediately to new fans, to old fans, but it was something that they also inevitably knew that if we do win, this is going to be a logo and a symbol that is synonymous with just being great. And that's where they took us. So to look back and say we were nervous or we were stressed out, it's just because you can't see that come to fruition until it actually does. And then you still can't believe that it even happened. So I still think we're still living through the fact that the Rams won a Super Bowl 3.5 months ago, but also the fact that they took on more than, and it'll eventually be a documentary one day, but everything, their timeline from about February, early February, all the way until the season started last year, was extraordinarily compelling. Just the way that they shaped themselves, the way that they introduced new uniforms, the way they introduced new players, it was just something to sit back and enjoy. And I never did that.
Well, you see it a lot in basketball where it's like a blockbuster trade, and then all of a sudden that team's in the finals. Yep. But even still, it's rare, right? Like LeBron to LA. It was what, his second or third year there when that happened?
Yeah, so I think it was the second.
For them to do it immediately and then not even have like just blockbuster trade, but just continue bringing in more stars in football is unheard of. So, and I know we may have potentially lost some of them. We definitely lost Von Miller, and we may potentially lose OBJ, even though truthfully, I don't think he's going anywhere. I'd be shocked if there wasn't a movie about it, you know, 10, 15 years down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, like we said, time and time again, this past
and just season, to, just to harken back to the bet online thing before we switch subjects, because I was a little curious. What has better odds, Stafford to win MVP or the Rams to repeat and win the Super Bowl?
I actually think the Rams to repeat and win the Super Bowl has better odds.
Really?
Give me just a second.
Yeah, why don't you pull that up and use and make sure to use Bet Online.
I sure will. I think as I'm stalling here for a second, the odds for Matthew Stafford to win MVP, you have to think there's probably six or seven players in front of him.
Ooh, all right, wait, hold on. Let's see if we can name those players. All right.
Brady, Mahomes, Allen, oh, Rodgers.
Okay. I thought I was doing it.
I'm not looking. Okay, well, go ahead and name the other three.
Brady, Mahomes, Rodgers, Kyler.
Ugh.
And then I would put probably Lamar.
Good guess.
And then Tom.
So the Rams are currently
You said Brady.
Yeah, Rams are 11-1. So they're plus 1,100 to win the Super Bowl. And for Matthew Stafford, player futures.
I would think probably.
Oh, I was right. I was right on the money.
What'd you say?
Josh Allen, Brady, Mahomes, Rodgers are the first four. And then it goes Herbert, Burrow, Russell Wilson.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
And then Matthew Stafford at plus 1,500.
Wow. So I was wrong with Kyler and Lamar. Are they like right under him?
There's a lot of value. Dak Prescott is below him at plus 1,600. Jalen Hurts is next up at plus 2,000. There's Lamar at plus 2,000. There's some value for you. And Kyler, plus 2,000. All below him. Deshaun Watson, Derek Carr, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, all below him.
Jared Goff?
Far beneath. far beneath the surface. Where? Let me see if I can find them.
They might not even be listed.
You know, I don't see them.
That's okay.
We'll find them eventually. We're going to actually end up talking about Jared Goff in this episode, since this is kind of a flashback episode, but also, you know, we're progressing, hopefully moving in the right direction. I wanted to go back for a second on this article that I thought was really, really interesting. And to me, it's the reason why Cooper Kupp was the MVP of the Super Bowl.
Right. A lot of people that I talk to about the MVP of the Super Bowl are kind of in my camp, where I was shocked it didn't go to Donald, particularly after that last play and, you know, the kind of the whole and like I know Kupp was spectacular, but like the whole ethos of the playoffs. And like if you're like history books are going to remember this, you know, Donald doing the where's my ring. And then in the NFC Championship game, and then ending the NFC Championship game and then ending the Super Bowl, like back to back, same motion. I feel like it may go down as like a, oh, I thought Donald won Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Go ahead, you know, give well, this I mean, nice no, argument.
That's the perfect color that I was looking for, because like Cooper Kupp, you don't remember receivers that won Super Bowl MVP. And if you do, they're standouts and they're ones that just stick out in your mind. But like I said, if you're anything like us, yeah, you've had ongoing conversations with family or friends over who you think should actually have been awarded the MVP of Super Bowl 56. Some may say Donald like you. I think others will argue that Cooper Kupp is unanimous, which is the camp that I'm in. And I've even heard some people say Stafford. I've heard people say, let's give out co-MVPs from now on. Kupp and Stafford and Donald should have all gotten one. You know, like this article from Sharon Williams of NBC Sports helped me really kind of comprehend why Cooper Kupp was the MVP of this game. And it wasn't necessarily the big catches in traffic or the heroic Triple Crown season. I mean, to me, those are all parts of the reason, but this quote, I think, stood out more than anything else. Is there something you want to add in before I read the quote?
No, I just kind of forgot he won the Triple Crown right now. Two historic seasons. When I think of the Rams over the past like 7 years, it's Donald is what comes to mind. So like, and then for him to end the game, it just like it makes so much sense. Did I have an Aaron Donald Super Bowl MVP bet? Probably.
I did too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Hey, I was happy they won, and I collected on my future Super Bowl bet too.
There you go. You hopefully use Bet Online to do that. But it was definitely something that I think like in the moment, it's Cooper Kupp, right? Because he's the game winning. It's the game winning catch. That's that fourth and one. And the reason specific why I think that he won the Super Bowl MVP is just because the Devils are in the detail. And this is no shot towards Aaron Donald whatsoever, but Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald. Like, he's going to come out and show out and dominate one-on-one and create mismatches all day long, help other people win. Cooper Kupp, I felt like, was just on the field by himself in that last possession. And on that fourth and one, this was his quote. It was definitely something that I think you, in that moment, if you don't get that, you turn the ball back over in Bengals territory, and that's going to be a really tough situation for us as a team to overcome. It's a play that caused a lot of consternation, quotes, as Sean McVay would say, because there are a lot of moving parts going on. You're on a silent count. The stadium is extremely loud. You're trying to figure out what's going on with this whole timing thing, with the whole setup. Cooper Kupp said that they fumbled it like once or twice during the week, where they were just trying to get the snap off. They legitimately couldn't get their timing and couldn't get the handoff off. And they were having issues with it. Like, they just couldn't get it down and going into it.
You're stressing me out on a play in the past.
I know. And going into it, Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp were talking behind the scenes, and they went into Sean McVay's office by the end of that week. And they said, hey, like, I know you want to call this play. You've been trying to push it in our run throughs and our walkthroughs over the past week. Matthew and I have it completely figured out. We can get it done. And then they didn't even actually run it again until that very moment in fourth and one. Wow. So they just, it was like, and you know what it was? And you really kind of go deep into the psychology of these coaches in these situations. Do you think it was McVay thinking to himself, in fourth and one, I've made the wrong call a lot of times. What if I just go against my gut here and listen to the players? Like, what do you think happened there?
I think it was a way to run the ball without the run, you know, because that's, and you could argue that's another reason why he kind of deserves Super Bowl MVP, because the run game was like non-existent. And then OBJ goes down and they're on like tight end number four. And that last drive, it's all him and Matt or Matthew, whatever. So I think the more, Sharon's kind of swinging me a little bit here.
Yeah. Sharon's a good writer. I do have to say, though, like with Cooper Kupp, again, it's not a shot at Aaron Donald whatsoever, but like just having the wherewithal and the overall knowledge of the game to say, look, hey, like we got this motion down. Like Matthew now understands that I'm signaling him when he calls me in motion with a shoulder twitch, or just like if you watch the play over again, it's almost like Kupp comes in motion. He stops for a quarter second, and that's the timing. That's the thing that allows them to make sure that they're staying on track. And that's what they were talking about all week. And McVay must have been thinking about it. Like, imagine McVay staying up at night, Saturday night, thinking to himself, oh, if I'm in a fourth and one and I got to call jet sweep. He actually said during the Super Bowl, I don't want to run it anymore, guys.
Legendary clip.
Something like that. Like with the pro chart in front of his face, guys, I don't think I want to run anymore. Like that's, you got to get creative. And I think Cooper Kupp is a guy like Andrew Whitworth, who's going to inevitably become a coach one day, that understands the game inside and out. He's even mentoring Allen Robinson, right? I think these option routes that they learn in
practice.
You got to
be like the same age, I would think, right?
They are, yeah. Yep. So, I mean, again, it's like, it's sad that we didn't get to see the combination of Bobby Woods and Odell Beckham Jr. and Cooper Kupp and DeSean Jackson all on the field at the same time in a Super Bowl. But this is the guy that, like, it's history didn't allow him to do this the first time around. And by the grace of God, he was able to do it this time, stay healthy for 21 games, have 21 touchdowns and win the triple crown and the receiving title. And I think had led the league in reception, something that Jerry Rice did like sporadically throughout his career, but never in the same season. He's like all of that together is the reason why.
To cap it off like that. I mean, this guy's name on that ring forever now.
Yeah, sure does. How about we move on to Raheem Morris?
I mean, I don't know what you have written here, but I would just say, as Rams fans, just get ready to see this guy become a head coach next year.
Yeah. McVay was asked to comment in this latest article where Mike Tomlin on Raheem Morris said that he was the best coach I know who doesn't have a head coaching job. McVay's comment was, Man, I'm going to miss him next year.
Wow. Well, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you're spot on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean knows how it works. Yeah. They love taking people from us. The whole league does.
Yeah. I mean, especially Mike Tomlin too, he's been so outspoken on the Rooney rule. Like, you evaluate the top 32 coaches in the league. Raheem Morris has the experience. What I have written down here is that he led a Rams defense. They allowed just 75 points in 4 playoff games, less than 20 points a game. Cardinals, Bucks, 49ers, Bengals, all top 15 points or scoring offenses last season. Raheem Morris and Sean McVay were in Washington together. So they go back. I remember we were talking about in the latest podcast, not in the latest podcast, but the one I listened to from a year prior. We were like, is he just a yes man? Is he too like buddy buddy? Is he too like aggressive? Like, is it just, he's the polar opposite of Brandon Staley. So we were thinking to ourselves, is this going to work? But they were in Washington together. He started coaching the year the Rams won their first Super Bowl. That was when he became a coach. I think it was at Hofstra or one of the colleges that I think he was a graduate assistant.
He looks great.
22. What were you saying?
So he looks great.
He does.
For that age? He does. How old? He's got to be like at least 50s then.
I'll tell you what. Raheem Morris with the shades on and the hat on the parade with that big smile. Man, he looks like a 25-year-old kid. Winning keeps you young. But like 22 years of understanding defenses on every single level. Why anybody was doubting him was a little bit strange. But I think we talked about this. There was a recency bias based on what he had done in Atlanta the year prior and a couple of years prior with some of his other roles in Tampa. And people loved Brandon Staley. Absolutely loved. You got to crown the Chargers, the official NFL champion.
People still love him.
Yeah, I know.
Even though, like, as the fans know, I'm a big fan of Bill Simmons and his podcast network. And the way that they talk about Staley, they just say it's like he must have like horrible gambling debts because this guy rolls the dice on fourth down every single time. I loved him as a defensive coordinator, but I think I'll be the first to say it because everybody else is like glossing over him. I don't think he's that great of a head coach, honestly. Like some people have, like clearly Sean McVay has like a leader mentality and like, you know, is aggressive with the calls, but like, as you've seen, like, you know, only like when he really needs to. And then, you know, you took Fossil out of the situation and he wasn't, you know, doing any of these trick plays on special teams anymore. But then you have Staley who's kind of running stuff like that on offense and on defense now. So I, you know, but yeah, to circle back to,
I don't know. I don't disagree with you. I think that, yeah, it remains to be seen with what he's going to do as a head coach. The part where I will disagree on is that I do think he's going to be a really good coach in the league. I just think he's had such a weird upbringing, is not necessarily the word, but resume, where he was like a Division III coach and he was coaching in high school. And like his trajectory to the NFL was insane. And he's just made such great strides. The Chargers win 12 games this year. Like Brandon Staley hire is the best that they've ever had. So, you know, you got to think that Chargers base. I mean, when you go back, Chargers coaches, Marty Schottenheimer, like who's the greatest Chargers coach of all time?
Tough time to be in that division. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, that's another point.
I would sell my Chargers stock and I would sell my, Chiefs stock.
In that division is going to win 12 games. It might be two teams that win 12 games or 11 and 12 or 13 and 12, you know, so. I don't know. I'm a big fan of Brandon Staley. I think he's going to be fine. But yeah, gambling debts, fourth down and 12 or fourth down and 3. I went to an Eagles game. I went to an Eagles Chargers game where Brandon Staley went for it, I think 11 out of 11 times. That's a little bit crazy. I understand the odds are in your favor.
I would not be able to process that as a fan.
I know.
Like I would be a wreck. I'm a wreck, you know, now.
I just feel like
how many times did he get it? That's what I would like to know.
But I still think, like, here's the question.
He won if Brandon that game. Staley's there. He won that Eagles game.
Yeah. Yeah. If Brandon Staley's there instead of Raheem Morris, do they still win the Super Bowl?
Ooh.
You know, it's a trick question.
I think
What does that relationship look like with like Eric Weddle down the stretch? You know,
if you look at last, well, not this past year, but 2020 Rams, they had a technically like a better defense. I don't know. That's an impossible question, but I'm leaning towards yes. Honestly,
I'm leaning towards yes also.
Yeah,
I am. And it's not that Raheem Morris is a worse coach than Brandon Staley. I think they're very, very similar, but I think that, they just have different ways about going about business. I think Brandon Staley is a little bit more schematic, and Raheem Morris has been in the league longer, understands players, understands just the basics a little bit better. And I think the players wanted to play for him, you know, and they did great for Brandon Staley in their first year with the Rams. But when you need that last play, you need that last push. Like, how close was Raheem Morris's relationship with Von Miller? You know, like, how much influence did he have in that decision versus what Brandon Staley would have had? There's all these little intricate details that I wish I had answered.
Call might go down as the greatest coming out of retirement story ever.
Eric Weddle?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Are you kidding me? Like, I was playing pickup basketball at East Florida.
Immediate impact on the field.
Yeah.
Like not even to the point where he was like a backup. Like, he was like crucial to those wins. I mean, especially that San Francisco game. Oh.
Nobody thought it was possible either. I think that was the best part, was it was a pleasant surprise. Like, the only people that thought it was possible were Raheem Morris and Sean McVay.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we'll give you whatever you need. He'll give you a couple million dollars. You come in, win us a Super Bowl. That guy had never even played in a Super Bowl.
I remember, like, at that point of the podcast, it was after the San Francisco loss, right? When they bring him in? Or was it right before?
No, it was after that. The regular season loss?
Yeah.
You're saying the last game of the season?
Yeah. They brought him in to start in the playoffs?
No, I don't know. I have to look. Exactly when they
were. Well, I just remember being gung ho on the team and like being like, I actually think that they could do this. I actually remember Ryan bringing up how like that loss came at like the perfect time, and how
yeah,
like,
it did.
It was
did.
Like now.
I'm looking
like,
back at the schedule.
It's way more likely for them to win three games in a row than like eight, which would have had to have done, and it like rallied everybody together. But I just remember bringing in Weddle was like, I was like, oh, we're cooked. Like,
it was so Jordan Fuller season ending ankle injury was that 49ers game. And then it looks like 3 days later, they signed him.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah, it was quick. Yeah, we had the Fuller injury, and then there was another injury that we were dealing with. Just tough sledding. But I mean, again, that could be a story that if you want to write a script about something, Eric Weddle will gladly help you write a documentary about his life, or just a story about a guy who was retired and came back and won a Super Bowl. It's just unbelievable.
Pick Let's up basketball, back. Just like Adrian Brody is Pat Riley in the Showtime Lakers show. For anybody,
are you not a fan of that casting?
I loved it. That's perfect casting.
Oh, yeah. I thought but the whole show was perfectly casted.
Oh, you watched it?
I watched six episodes, and then I was like, HBO is a little bit expensive.
There's a really, yeah, it's a really sad episode after six, I think. So
it was. Yeah. I mean, I'll continue to watch it, but I just canceled HBO. So maybe I'll try to sneak. Do you have an HBO login?
I have my friends.
Do you have games on your phone?
Mm-hmm. Mario Kart.
All right. You want to move on?
Games on my phone. But yeah.
You got to talk to Dominic. He has Mario Kart on his phone. He said that's his escape for 5 minutes at work. You got to do it. Okay. The video with McVay talking about Jared Goff with Mike Silver. I'm going to play it.
Oh, you have it?
Yeah, I have it. Of course.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, of course. Hold on. Give me a second. Hold on.
He loves his head. I love
his head. He does.
McVay talking about Jared.
Mike Silver talking about Jared. All right, here we go.
Open mic.
I'm close with Jared Goff. I'm close with you. I know you and Jared talked after the trade and, you know, really went through a lot of stuff. Looking back at that experience, you know, are you hard on yourself? Would you have done things any differently in terms of just how it ended?
Yeah, I think know, that was a hard thing for me, because the thing that's more important than anything is being a good communicator, clear, open, and honest, making sure people aren't caught off guard, and really having respect for the players and the coaches and what they have to do. And I wish that there had been better in-person communication. You know, I think you and I talked about this. Number one, and I know you know this, you're very supportive of Jared. You guys are really close. Well, I've been supportive of Jared, but I think the one thing that hurt me that I know you know is that I would never want anything to be misunderstood about my appreciation, my respect for Jared. Was it a tough decision? Yes. Were there some things that I could have handled better in terms of the clarity provided for him? No doubt. If I had it over again, what I would do is, before I had even gone to Cabo, when there was a possibility of, all right, if Matthew Stafford's available, or if there's other quarterbacks available, that would be something that we would explore. You sit down with him, you look him in the eye, you tell him that, instead of calling him and setting up a meeting where that was my intention when I got back from Cabo. However I cut it, whatever I'm going to say from here on out is an excuse, but my intentions were to be able to sit down with Jared. I never thought things would accelerate as quickly as they did, to be able to look him in the eye and let him know what was going on. When it got public that we were interested in Matthew, what we thought was going to be a week's worth of time ended up happening in about 24 to 36 hours. So all in all, biggest thing I regret, being able to sit down, look him in the eye and be able to communicate kind of where we are, what we were going to try to do moving forward. And for that, I regret it. I will not make those same mistakes again, but care about Jared. He sure as hell did a lot of good things. And I think the thing that shows what a stud and what a class act he really is one of the best text messages I got after the Super Bowl was from Jared Goff. And wow. So I think the further we get away, the more appreciation that we'll have for the great 4 years that we did have together. Because it was a lot of really good times. He's a special kid. He's a special guy. Really a very good football player that does a great job, for the Lions. I thought he played really well down the stretch. You know, we get some guys around him, Josh Reynolds. But all in all, just the better communication, better clarity is what I would have wanted. And I didn't like the outside in narrative, but I think he knows where my heart was. And I was glad that we were able to connect, sit down, be honest with each other. And I think, we both have a lot of respect for each other. And I wish I had handled it better as a leader.
You know, I went up to his house at the beginning of Super Bowl week. And,
all right.
You know, one of the things.
Oh, go ahead. I'll let you react.
How the fans of the Rams Brothers podcast know how much of a supporter I am of Jarrett. I just saw really nice stuff to hear. You said this before the podcast. It definitely feels like McVay now is more candid and has dropped the facade now that he has won. Because before, that's just like a really touchy kind of subject, because he essentially had to fire somebody or trade them, transfer them to a different branch, probably the worst branch of the NFL. It's like you're taking Michael Scott and you're putting him in like Tulsa.
It's like when you go, they're in Scranton, and then what, they go to the office where Jim has to go to the office where they're just playing Call of Duty all day. Called Tuna. You're transferred to the wrong branch. I get it.
Yeah. And it's just nice to hear that they still have like a cool relationship, you know?
Yeah. And what you and I were talking about earlier today.
And congratulations to Jared for getting
engaged.
He's engaged. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. Congratulations, Jared. I think the big takeaway from that is
he went to Jared?
No. Good. Great question, though. Jared Goff did not go to Jared. He had somebody named Jared customize his stone to give to his Sports Illustrated wife, future wife.
I guarantee it probably wasn't made in a lab. It's probably a real diamond.
It was probably found deep, deep in a vault, because Jared Goff has deep, deep pockets. With what you and I were talking about before this episode, I feel like when you win a Super Bowl, you have the necessary clarity that you need to be able to speak on the firing or the passing on of somebody, even when it didn't go exactly how you wanted it to go. Right. I think that Sean McVay isn't always great when he's candid. Like a lot of this, you can tell he doesn't really know what to do with his hands. If Jared was over here, then I'd be over here. You know, it's just, he's a little all over the place, but he didn't say what he wanted to say initially because his brain was so clogged with trying to win. Like he was trying to figure out what that next step was. He wanted to be able to eventually find himself in this position where, hey, I have a clear mind. I could actually think through decisions in a sound manner, so, and I'm not going to get clogged up. He didn't want to think about what if any longer. And as a coach, stubborn, as committed to excellence as he is, up at 4:30 in the morning, you know, drinking red wine on the white couch, it is a hard life to live. And if you want to get over the top, you have to do things differently. And it all worked out in everybody's favor. I think that it coming full circle, hearing that brings those two together, brings us together.
No. I agree. I think it's just, it was never like everything with Jared off the field was always so sincere and honest, and it was hard not to just respect the person. So, you know, it just felt like you had lost a friend, kind of. And yeah. Then, you know, from the good Lions.
It was like now, the end of Toy Story 3 when Andy had to give all his toys away.
Yeah, but now it's kind of cool because you have Toy Story 4. And and I watch the Lions a lot now, which is kind of fun to kind of have.
Yeah, you just like you just go see Lightyear in theater. Going to see Lightyear in theaters is your cinematic comparison to going to see the Lions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
You know?
It's nice to hear that.
That's I think awesome. So too. I you know, it's much needed clarity.
It's like a cherry on top of like the best Sunday ever, right?
Right. Right. And it's like you couldn't ask for anything else. That was the one relationship that you were hopeful that was closed out the right way. And even if it wasn't, it seems like it's on extremely good terms right now. And that's because they're both adults and professionals and want to win. Like they understand the situation. So I
also think
that.
Like if Goff has a good year, you know, like sky's the limit.
Yeah. I just want him to be a consistent starter over the next 5 years. I know you and I were talking about that. A good year this year will pay dividends for him.
Yeah, because even if they, you know, if there's problems elsewhere on the Lions and they draft somebody, I'd be shocked if he didn't get picked up by somebody.
Same.
I mean, Carson Wentz has a freaking job. I don't know how that's
where's he going to be next year? Next year he'll be in Carolina, and then he'll be in Cleveland, and then he'll be with the Jets. Like, just, you know, there's one-offs with Carson Wentz. I would like to see Goff build a foundation in Detroit, and it looks like
he would love nothing more than that. And cool is they all seem like they really trust him over there.
Yeah.
Everything I've read about him has been positive.
I know. Could you have imagined back, you know, almost was it a year and a half ago at this point, that both sides would work out so perfectly? Matthew Stafford just sold a multi-million-dollar house and is moving to a new one with his four girls and his wife. And I mean, I've never seen anybody look so happy, like on Instagram stories and everything. His girls are brushing his hair and he's just enjoying what he had worked so hard to do for the last 36 years. And then there's Jared, who has the perfect mentality to be in Detroit. It's like he could have been drafted there when Matthew Stafford was drafted there and played 15 years there. Like
his persona, I envy it because it's so hard not to take that stuff personally. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine having to take that mentality into the workplace every single day after you've clearly been demoted.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, you got to be a mature professional. And for somebody that's 25 years old, he's 26. I always get Goff's age wrong, but it's your age. He's 27. So I'll never get his age wrong again. It's just a lot. And Whitworth commented on it too, right? Like he can't know all of these schemes. He can't know every read. He can't know where everybody's going to be on the field at all at the same time because he doesn't have the kind of experience. So wishes.
Stafford, who's, you know, just got his neck wrung for years in Detroit. Obviously he's ready to, you know, apply to a good team.
Sure is. Just if they both would have, you know, had a ring in their back pocket, that would have been even sweeter, but hopefully one day for Jared. I don't have much. I have this written down, but the latest on OBJ, have a little bit of a blurb written down on Allen Robinson, just that people are going to absolutely love him if OBJ doesn't come back.
Well, the way I always saw him more as like a replacement for Woods.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I don't think he's a combination.
I think Van Jefferson might have a huge year.
You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how they have those three guys on the field at the same time. And you know what? When they start to get to OTAs and mini camps and everything, they might realize, you know, and in a three receiver set, they just run so many four receiver sets. Like they just have everybody so spread out. It's difficult to imagine they'll just run with a core three. So Odell may have a space and a place, but I'm just trying to understand like Allen Robinson on the outside. He's not necessarily going to be in the slot. You know, you could rotate Jefferson and Cup within the slot, and you know how they move around players so well. I think it's going to be difficult if you add another body in there. I hope that he comes back because I feel like he's that piece. Even if you go winless in October, like you did last year, winless in November, he could be somebody that comes in and, you know, they go undefeated the second he touches the field. That would be my prediction.
Yeah.
He comes back in like early November. They don't lose a game for the rest of the season.
I just, maybe there's a little animosity almost.
Maybe.
In the situation where it's like, look, dude, like, we think you're great. We all won together, but I don't know how you expect us to pay you all this money if you're only going to be coming through like the back end of the year. You know right. what I mean?
Yeah.
I know. But I think when the chips are down, they want him to come back. But at the same time, it's like, look, we couldn't pay Vaughn, you know, like we had right. to get our guys right. and the people that we paid are all besides Stafford. Well,
they made it work when they got creative. I just think that cryptocurrency right now is not a favorable form of money.
I saw how Trevor Lawrence like lost like millions and millions of dollars because
That's really sad. Like I feel horrible for players that, and Odell just had a kid. Like I'm sure he wouldn't mind, you know, maybe a renovation in the kitchen or whatever he could use the extra $75,000 for from his crypto bonus. Although players get bonuses for winning playoff games and Super Bowls, and he was incentivized accordingly. Could have transferred the money, but still, I think that's just, we're going to have to continue to monitor that. If that's the missing piece and he can come back, let's run it back.
Yeah.
That's all I got. Anything else from you?
Thanks for listening, guys. Honestly, it's really great to be able to still feel like there's an audience when it's a, you know, it's the off season and what we're mainly doing is going to the beach and watching baseball. So it's nice to know that there's a community of Rams fans that still are as diehard as Dean and I.
So I have to ask, since this was, and I completely echo your sentiment there. I have to ask though, as this was a pretty popular tweet on the Rams Brothers Twitter account, would you go with Dickerson and Steven Jackson or Marshall Faulk and Todd Gurley? So for example, I'll paint you the picture. You need one score against the greatest defense in the league. You have a dual backfield. You could pick whichever two you want. They could be pass catchers. They could be runners, whatever you want. Who do you pick?
All in their prime.
All in their prime, yeah.
Every prime.
Every prime.
Up the gut, Steven Jackson.
I thought you were going to go in that direction. How do you stop a combination of Eric Dickerson and Steven Jackson?
I just like Dickerson's obviously like before my time. And I know the greatness of him.
People are still trying to catch Eric Dickerson's rushing title.
Yeah. It's just so funny to me how the Rams just like, don't like almost all of them. But besides Steven Jackson, like, the Rams barely gave them their due. I mean, Gurley was clearly his time. He's retired right. now. But Dickerson, off traded away. It's nice now that he's like back in like a Rambassador role.
I think all you have to do really is just go back and watch Marshall Faulk. Just highlights of Marshall Faulk.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nobody
Is that your pick?
Faulk and Gurley. Just because, especially in today's league.
I wore a Steven Jackson jersey all throughout the playoffs. The same one I had when I was like, I don't know, like 10.
Marshall, though, I mean, just as a pass catcher, was just a lethal weapon. So was Todd. But I just
– my God.
I mean, even if Todd wanted to sit on the sidelines.
Gurley was magical.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's been a great run of Rams fandom over the last, 5-6 years. But also historically – he had four of the best running backs of all time. And like positions of value, like I was just looking around and I know have a couple of people on Twitter that were like, yeah, maybe do a position of value instead of like you go Andrew Whitworth or Orlando Pace, like two great left tackles historically, like you go head to head and there's greatness all around. So it's just, we have fun with that stuff.
Yeah.
As always, Bet Online is your primary source of gambling, or whatever you can call it. But yeah, use Bet Online if you want to place a bet. That's all we got for today.
Nice. Oh, look at that. 45 minutes. Perfect time. Perfect cool. time for a commute from Cherry Hill, New Jersey to almost down the shore.
Yeah, you just have to stop and go get a Brown's donut on the way and then, you know, kill the rest of the time. All right. Peace out, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Horns up,
thanks
baby.
Thanks for listening.